Wouldn't it be great to have your own small business, right? And when you have that small business, don't you need that support of a big business? Well, let Verizon help champion your small business dream, whether you own a small business or you're scaling one, or maybe even just starting one from scratch. You need Verizon Small Business Days. That's right. From April 22nd through April 28th, you can partner with Verizon business experts for small business support. Paul, what does that mean? It means you can receive a free tech check with one-on-one meetings with a Verizon business expert. Plus, they'll give you personalized advice, solutions that are specific to your small business needs. And you know why? Because Verizon has your back. So don't miss out. Book an appointment today. Just call 1-800-483-4428 or go to verizon.com/small business.
Chapter 1. Wayfair welcomes you to the Waberhood. Our hero, Titus Burgess, ambled down the stylish street of an enchanting utopia. A woman waved from a chic lounger. "Welcome to the Waberhood," she said, "where Wayfair helps everyone create a home they love." Titus stared in awe. Bohemian Boulevard, Trendsetter Terrace, Mid-Century Circle.
Titus,
You're
reading the Wayfair catalog.
Oh, you'll love Chapter 2. Wayfair's fast and free shipping saves a potluck.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
This podcast is dropping on February 23rd, 2023. That's 2-23-23. 2-23s. June Diane Raphael Scheer is 23 digits, if you include the hyphen and her husband's last name. Her birthday is 01-04-1980, which adds up to 23. Jeffrey Characterides adds up to 24, but if you misspell it as Jeffrey with one F Characterides, it is 23. This podcast is hosted by Tall John Scheer. And if you assign the corresponding number in the alphabet to his name, you get 21, 12, 12, 10, 15, 8, 14, 19, 3, 8, 5, 5, 18. If you add those all up, you get 69, which, if you divide by the number of names, Tall John Scheer 3, you get 23. But did you see the 69? We saw the number 23, so you know what that means.
Now it's time for
Hello, people of Earth, conspiracy theorists, unite. Today we are talking about a classic Jim Carrey thriller. The number 23 came out in 2007. And if you've not seen this film, the plot is going to be a little bit tricky to break down, but I'm going to try 2 weeks in a row. But basically, we are following Walter Sparrow, played by Jim Carrey, who works as a dog catcher, who comes to find a book titled The Number
23. I forgot that.
Oh, yeah. Did you forget this movie starts with him being Ace Ventura and talking to animals?
I forgot that.
So this dog catcher comes to find a book called The Number 23, which sends him down the rabbit hole of the 23 Enigma, which is a real conspiracy theory. I'm going to just play a quick clip to show you exactly how that comes into play.
The Titanic sank on the morning of April 15th, 1912. That's 415-1912. 23. The Hiroshima bomb was dropped at 8:15. 8 plus 15 is 23. The Mayans said the end of the world would come in 2012. 20 plus 1 plus 2 equals 23. Go ahead. Tell yourself it's just a number.
And then a larger mystery unravels. Did Jim Carrey's character actually write the book? How much does his wife know? Is there a larger conspiracy? The answer is yes, as long as you don't think about any of the answers. To break this all down, I am bringing in my two and three co-hosts, my 23 co-hosts.
What?
Jason Mantzoukas and June Diane Raphael. Wow. Wow.
Wow. We're like, this is like the X-Files. We're like, we're solving cases. This is a mystery.
The crazy thing is, like, listening to you say that, though, Paul, listening to your intro, like, your math that you did was way more complicated than the math that is done over and over throughout the course of this movie. It's literally that most of the dialogue is simple math of just like one plus two equals three, and three plus two is five, and five minus two is three, and 32 is 23.
And also, like, and your last name is Shear, and that name is 14, and 14 plus 9, you know, they're assigning numerical value to colors, names, words, all
pink
this.
Pink is 23, red is a little less than because it's white, and so then now red is pink, and pink is 23. And 32 is also 23.
Like 14, but if you add the 1 and the 4, you get 5. But if you take the 5 and you look at 5, 5 is 2 and 3 together, okay. 23.
I truly felt insane after this was over.
I will say...
I felt mad.
You said something in the intro, Paul, that blew my mind. That there is... This is based on real conspiracy theories around the number 23?
Yes, this is a real thing. And by the way, this is such a real thing that Jim Carrey named his production company JC23 because he is obsessed with the number 23.
Why did you decide to do this project?
Well, I was kind of obsessed with the number 23 for years, you know? Yeah, I had a friend who passed it on to me like a virus, and it just entered my life big time. It's everywhere. And even though I was born at 2:30 in the morning, my daughter's born at 12:11, I mean, it just kept going on and on and on in my life until I changed the name of my company to JC23 because somebody came up with a book that was about the 23rd Psalm. And he said, does this have anything to do with the 23 thing, man?
Okay, now
this is all starting to click into place.
Now I'm starting to understand.
I mean, so this is it. Like, this is Jim Carrey's big thing. JC23 Entertainment is his production company, and they're
holy shit.
Now,
because as I was watching this, I was like, "Yeah, is that Jesus Christ?"
I was just the opposite that's also of 666, Jesus Christ.
Which two times three is six.
23 plus 10 disciples is 33, which is the age Jesus Christ was when he died.
I mean, and this is where this is. By the way, this thing it can go on so long. William S. Burroughs was the first person to really believe in 23 as the enigma.
A totally normal man.
Yes, so he
totally normal. The author of Naked Lunch,
and then all of a sudden you start to see it in all these different things. I'll just read you a couple more because I know we've given you a million examples. But Norman human sex cells have 23 chromosomes. Other human cells have 46, arranged in 23 pairs. The Earth's axis is tilted at 23 degrees. Musical acts with connections to number 23. Tool, Blink 182. Like, they're all these, like, 23 is an album.
This is what I don't understand is... You can make so many numbers work if you do enough kind of, if you're backing into 23. I mean, couldn't we do that with any number?
Well, yeah. I mean, honestly, I feel like...
Here's what I'll say. As
I feel
absurd
crazy.
As absurd as it is, and as I agree with you, June, as crazy making as it sounds, what year, Paul, did you say this came out? 2007?
2007.
So in 2007, this must have felt like this is... preposterous. Eye roll city, right? We live in a culture and a society now where the conspiracy theories that huge amount of the population like participate in and believe in are so much more ridiculous than this. This movie makes more sense than like QAnon nonsense.
Well,
actually thought like, was this the beginning of Q?
Oh my God. Is Jim Carrey Q?
Well, I'm going to tell you, there's a lot of people who love this movie. And I got to tell you that...
There are?
Oh, yes. Because they are conspiracy theory nuts.
Okay.
And by the way, if you listen to the show, we're right behind you. We are support you 100%. But
and are you willing to commit? Are we just doing numerology? Is this numerology February?
I mean,
are we
have
doing?
To be.
Are we next week? Are we doing the lucky number 11?
I just have to say that this is a perfect example of these types of movies where somebody just has enough power to get their own weird idea out. And it's like, if I can just get this to the masses, like, because this really does feel like.
Well, that's the thing, Paul. Here's my genuine question.
Yeah.
Okay. Because at the end of the movie, I felt insane. I was like, put me in an institution, please. but I am genuinely asking, at the end of the movie, is the story that Jim Carrey is insane, or that the number 23 is actually coming for
it's
him.
It chased his father.
Both.
And then it.
Both.
Yeah.
So it's coming for him, and so it made him crazy. But I guess that's what I'm saying, is that the movie sort of affirms that 23 is a killer number and the devil's
now,
number.
Yes. Much like Jim Carrey, Walter Swallow was infected by
Sparrow.
They're both birds. Sorry. A sparrow.
And that's not to be confused with his detective name, the great.
Oh, Jesus.
Or his wife. Fingerling.
Robin. Fingerling.
Yeah. Fingerling. Like the potato. I could not get past the potato.
Or his pseudonym.
Oh, his pseudonym is this is the best one. The pseudonym is my favorite part, because when you say it out loud, it gets really great. Topsy Kretz. A.K.A. Top Secrets.
Topsy Kretz.
I laughed hard at the reveal of Topsy Kretz.
Topsy Kretz.
Secrets out.
Kretz.
Topsy Kretz. Topsy Kretz is the author.
Oh my God.
Topsy Kretz is the author of the book that Jim Carrey, the dog catcher, finds. Now, here's what I'll say. When this movie first started, this is in this era of sad Jim Carrey, like depressed Jim Carrey, like a little bit after Eternal Sunshine. He's got the long hair. And and he looks to me like he's a FedEx guy, right?
Yes, he's got this long hair. And he's got it styled in a way that is like from guys in 2007, which is flat down on his head, kind of matted down, even though like he looks like, okay, anyway, it doesn't matter. When they give him flashbacks in the movie, the young actor playing young Jim Carrey, some 20 some odd years in the past, has the exact same haircut.
Yeah.
I was like, why did they give the kid that's in the late 60s a 2007 haircut?
I have a feeling that was a miscommunication from the director, Joel Schumacher, to the hair and makeup team. It's like, Jim Carrey. I mean,
I'm worried they're not going to know this is a flashback and it's young Jim Carrey. Make him look exactly the same.
Well, at that point, we're not even supposed to think he's young Jim Carrey. We're supposed to think this is a young Topsy Kretz.
Oh, that's right. It's young Topsy Kretz. That's right. Because there's flashbacks inside of the fantasy sequences.
Yes.
This movie is like layers on layers on layers of nothing, frankly. The movie is a zero. Like, it adds up to in numerology senses or numerical senses, the whole movie is times zero, so it ends up zero.
Well, I will say this. When you meet him, Jim Carrey, I was like, what is this movie going to be about? It's going to be about like a sad man who finds something in this number 23. But then this reveal of him like in a truck looking miserable, depressed, and then it's like a comical decal on the side that's like, you know, he's an animal, you know, dog. He's a dog catcher, essentially dog catcher. He's like, he hates animals.
I don't know how they ever expected us to get on board with a character that hates dogs, like hates dogs and calls them evil, dead dogs and wants to catch them. And
I
was so angry at this character, and I was so appalled at the treatment of these animals. It was so strange. I'm like, and looking back on the movie, to be quite honest, Ned, the dog, I don't know why was Ned there? Why did he have to hate dogs? That cute little dog, he almost ran him over.
Well, the dog essentially brought him into
his
first experience of death, right?
I mean, the movie is like, The movie, I feel like, can't decide if it's supernatural or not.
Right.
If there's actual, because, you know, like there's this element of like, oh, is the dog kind of provoking him into this journey of self-discovery and remembering and uncovering his memories and stuff? Because the dog bites him, he chases the dog, and the dog goes right to the gravestone of the woman that he killed.
Right. And then also later on, we see the dog with this man, this very intimidating man.
Oh, yeah. Who's that? Is that revealed
in the very last seconds? I think that might have been the devil. Okay, here's my theory, the larger theory. I think it's like the number 23 is the killer in this movie, and it will always find you. It will make you appear to be insane, but you're basically just carrying out the will of the number 23, and the number 23 is the devil's number. So the devil has a dog who then helps people get back to that. I don't know. That's part of what I would put together in here, like based on the things I know.
If the devil had an animal, there's no way it would be a dog.
Well, I mean, there's Cerberus, the three-headed dog that guards the gates of hell. So there's that dog, but that's not what we're talking about here. The other thing I couldn't figure out is that scene at the end of the movie where we see the dog, Ned, we see this dark, shadowy figure, and they're at the gravestone at the funeral. The funeral for Laura, the woman that Jim Carrey killed, but they're having a funeral 15 years later?
Well, because they never found her remains.
That's right.
I would really love to get into why Robin took her skeleton and put it somewhere.
I think to protect Jim Carrey.
Oh, wait. Scott is saying her name is Agatha.
Yeah, Agatha is her name. Robin is the son.
But Agatha
wouldn't have known Jim Carrey to move the body.
Well, no, because she found... Wait, no.
No, I think she realizes it
at that place.
And she's read the book.
The Institute. At Nathaniel's
Institute. Oh, right. Because,
so she figures out that he's the author of the book.
Right,
yes, when Bud Cort is... When she finds Bud Cort's crazy room.
Okay, wait. Let me just go back for a little bit. Just because if you're listening to this, it sounds like pure...
I would like the t-shirt to be Bud Cort's crazy room.
I would love... I mean,
and
let's make it...
It's just a red-hued, scrawl-filled nightmarescape.
Okay, but here's my question, Paul. And I'm sorry. I'm really sorry to interrupt. But my question about, like, 23 and the devil. So Agatha already wanted to paint her room.
Let me just set up one little bit of here, because I think this will help us. And June immediately turns off her camera. I'll say this. We meet Jim Carrey. He seems like a... Oh, Jason just turned off. No, guys, I just have to explain one part of the plot. We meet Jim Carrey. He seems like he is a depressed loner, doesn't fit in. And then you reveal... He is happily married to a beautiful woman and has a son and seemingly a pretty functional family life, right?
Not so just that, functional, I would say happy.
Yes. So we have Virginia Madsen, who's Agatha, and we have Logan Lerman, who is Robin, that's a son. I just wanted to set that up. So this weird character that we meet who hates dogs, who's xenophobic, is actually a very well-adjusted, like, normal guy living a normal life. And all right, so now I just want to label who these characters are, because it's going to get hard.
You're right.
Also, because many of them, like, there are a couple of characters, like Jim Carrey plays both Walter and he plays Fingerling in the fantasy sequences, like,
yes,
as does right. Virginia Madsen plays Agatha, but she also plays
Fabrizia
Fabrizia.
I recently went to the Telluride Comedy Festival, and I was sick and tired of staying in the same kind of cookie-cutter places, and I went on Airbnb, and I found a perfect spot for me and the family. We had an amazing time because we felt like home. Then I realized, wait a second, what if I could give that feeling to someone else? Yes! That's the best part. When you're away, your home could be an Airbnb. That's right. Many people host on Airbnb, but there are people who have never thought about it or didn't even realize that their space could be an Airbnb. Hosting can easily fit into your lifestyle, and you can make someone feel great and make a little bit of money too, because we all need a little bit of money. And maybe your talent or your gift to the world is having a killer place. So if you have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. Here's the thing, people. Walmart Plus is the membership that saves you time and money on the stuff you'd expect, but also on the stuff you don't. Let me explain. Did you know with your Walmart Plus membership, you can save money on gas? Yeah, save gas while you drive the kiddos to soccer practice, plus visit your in-laws, plus venture into the wilderness, plus wherever you want to go. Because Walmart Plus also saves you time and money with free delivery, perfect for ordering new remote batteries or coffee when somebody finishes it without telling you. And then, you know, eat all your snacks that you have stored in the back of that pantry for movie night. How dare they? Plus, you can actually even save on the actual movies with a Paramount Plus subscription. Stream Top Gun Maverick, plus Mean Girls, plus Jack Reacher, plus so much more, because savings is what this whole Walmart Plus membership is all about anyways. Members save on gas, plus free delivery, plus Paramount Plus, plus so much more. Start a free 30-day trial at www.walmartplus.com. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions, $35 order minimum, Paramount Plus Essential Plan only, separate registration required.
Do you find yourself searching for true crime podcasts that are different from what you're always recommended? Do you want to make a real difference in the cases that you're following? Well, you're a crime junkie, and I'm Ashley Flowers, the creator and host of the number one true crime podcast, Crime Junkie. There are hundreds of episodes already available, and each Monday we dive into the details of cases spanning from some of the most infamous to those that you have never heard covered before. Listen to Crime Junkie podcast now, wherever you're listening.
So the reason why this number 23 book comes into Jim Carrey's hands is because he is late to his own birthday dinner with his wife because this monster of a dispatcher from the dog impound makes him work a little bit later one night because
he turned down her advances
in the best dialogue of all time.
Oh my
where,
God. She's basically like, why don't you take it out and wag your tail at me?
And he goes, I wouldn't wag my tail in the bitch's room with you if you were the last bitch on earth, because it's a celebration party. It's his birthday party, but it's a dog-themed birthday party, so his cake is a dog. So it's all
well,
the
and
dog
also, it looks like the ladies' room has been covered over with the word bitch.
Right.
So it does say, the bathroom does say bitch's room.
It's also so convoluted. It's like, why would it's like having a birthday party for a lawyer and everything being law themed? Like, this is the jury box.
I had so many questions about, first of all, where does this movie take place?
I don't know. Philadelphia.
Okay. So now I know for a fact that in some places, the animal controller is an elected position. In some small towns and stuff.
Okay. I do not think Jim Carrey had to run for this.
Okay. But my question is, how many people could possibly be working in this department? It's enormous. Not only that, but there seems to be, in whatever small town, city this is, there seems to be a behavioral psychologist just for the animal controllers.
Yes.
So that if they run into any traumatic experiences on the job, they can go talk to this person.
They've basically taken all of the elements of a traditional police story.
Yes.
The bar that services the detectives, the mental health professional who helps out the police who've had traumatic experiences and clears them for duty so that they can return to the force after a shooting or an event or whatever. All of those tropes from a police procedural story have been ported onto an animal control officer who let a dog get away on his birthday.
And was bitten by a dog.
Well, yes.
I want to underline it one more time, too. It is a crazy way to meet a lead character. It's Jim Carrey. He first barks at another dog. He's an animal, you know, controller.
Was that a bark, Paul? That first sound he made, I was like, I don't know what that is.
He was taunting a dog.
Do you think that this, all of this, he hates dogs, he's taunting the dog, he's talking to the dogs. Is this just a bit or a trying to reframe or change the narrative from Ace Ventura, I talk to dogs, I'm a goofball, that this is like, is this a wink or is this trying to...
I thought about that.
Because it's the movie starts and I was like, this feels like obviously referencing Ace Ventura. Like, I'm not always nice to animals.
Right. I hate animals.
I can also hate animals.
Yep.
I have range.
I mean, at this point, his career, Ace Ventura came out in 1994. This is 2007. I think he's pretty far away from
to the Schumacher Batman that Jim Carrey was in. Is this another Schumacher, Jim Carrey? Were they on set for Batman and Jim Carrey
Batman and Robin is 1997, guys.
I think that all this is Jim Carrey's fascination with the number 23.
To put it in context, this is of the
and
era
that's timeless
where he's kind of already had his ups and downs, and this is like just a weird sidestep because this is coming out in 2007 and he's already been Lemony Snicket. He already did Eternal Sunshine. He did Bruce Almighty, right? So he did Fun with Dick and Jane and then the number 23. And the next movie he made was Yes Man. So it's like, this is an odd... Like, it's not, it's post-Majestic. It's, it's a weird moment of time.
It's not in his heyday, but it's in this period where he's trying to do a bunch of different stuff.
Yeah.
Interesting. And trying to reinvent himself. It's so interesting because I feel like one of the things we haven't mentioned is in the fantasy sequence of this, because part of me feels like this is what an element that Jim Carrey may have been drawn to. Is that he gets to play the affable everyman who's kind of spiraling out of control. But in the fantasy sequences, the fantasy is all a noir detective story, like an incredibly washed out, stylized, femme fatale filled noir story. And
plays a saxophone.
And has bad tattoos.
I mean, he plays a saxophone shirtless. It's like that character from The Lost Boys. But here's what I'm sorry.
But how can you be an everyman if you hate dogs?
Well, I want to bring it back to he doesn't only hate dogs. He's also kind of a racist because when he does confront that dog, he presents this like he is doing a monologue to this dog about how this dog is going to be eaten. If this dog was in China, he's like, and I guess I just point that out for a couple of reasons because it's our lead character and he is going to go into a descent of madness, but you start off going, this guy is fucking sucks. Like
absolutely, Paul. And I would add that this is not a vicious dog.
No,
not at all.
It's
and
a
I would also add
pit bull mix of some kind who seemed like pretty docile.
Yeah. Oh, and I would also add, what does he have to be such a dick about? Like, what's
that's
he
what
so upset?
He's
like,
he has a
wonderful home with a supporting, loving family. I mean, maybe he's haunted by the traumas of his past and just doesn't know it and is waiting for a handmade book to be found and trigger his memories.
Can I ask something, though? Why not have him find the book?
Well, this is my question. Why? Okay, Agatha said that she has read the book, but she's in the bookstore holding the book. So did she already read it before she went to the bookstore? Did she try to open him? Because here's the thing, and we have to spoil this at one point because I think we have to unpack it. We find out much, much later in the movie that Jim Carrey has been in a mental institution, has one of the best exits of that. Like after he's in a mental institution. He has amnesia, which makes him forget that he killed somebody. And as he's leaving the mental institution, the doc's like, well, I hope I don't see you anymore. And he's like, I'm not going to come back. Like they have a joking dispatch from the mental institution. And then immediately as he walks out the door, he has a meet cute with Virginia Madsen where he like bumps into her and she drops a cake. And then they get together. But So this entire movie, she knows he knows nothing about his life before 23 years old.
Well, but why doesn't he know that? Why isn't he able? He doesn't seem to, you know, he doesn't remember whether it's amnesia or they say because he tries to commit suicide and jumps out of a window. And so they're not sure if it's trauma from the fall or if it's some sort of amnesia or if it's just whatever. But he doesn't seem to remember any of his past life. So, but mustn't his family understand? It does. The movie wants to have it every way. Right. They want him to be totally normal. And then through the process of finding and reading this book, and because that's what we haven't really said definitively. The whole movie is about him becoming obsessed with this book and thinking that this book and this author is writing about him, only to find at the end of the movie, obviously, that Jim Carrey, his character, wrote the book prior to going insane, prior to amnesia, rather.
The best part is that we find that out because Virginia Madsen rips off a piece of paper that had been like glued to the title page of the manuscript where it said by, and then it said top secrets. What's his name again, Paul? Top secrets.
Top secrets, yeah.
I can't deal with that. But who did
top
that?
Secrets.
Did Bud Cort do that?
That's what I don't know.
Who made the red book? You know, because here's the thing. By the end of the movie, there's two copies of the book. One we've spent the whole movie with, which is the red covered book. The red cover, which matches the red walls, which matches the red light bulb in Bud Cort's chaos room. Like, and then there's the copy that is the manuscript, which is the loose pages that Jim Carrey types up and handwrites and glues stuff to.
The last chapter's on a wall.
And then the last chapter's on the wall in the hotel. But who made the red book? Bud Cort? I don't know.
This man went insane and wrote this book. Top Secrets is Fingerling.
Doctor.
But he wrote the book. Jim Carrey wrote the book. So Jim Carrey wrote this book like as an insane person. And then he's like, ooh, wouldn't this be great if I just self-published this book under somebody? It's a wild ride. I don't know why he wanted to get that book.
Wait,
I don't think he published it.
No, because he sent it to the thing. He sent it to the public. I thought that Bud Cort published the book.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I thought you were saying Jim Carrey.
Oh, no, no.
I misunderstood.
So basically, they take advantage of this guy. By the way, my stepfather used to bring home beautiful watercolors painted by schizophrenic patients of his. They're really gorgeous. And June told me I couldn't put them in the house because they're too scary. But
one was very frightening.
It
had nothing to do with this, you know, having schizophrenia or not. It was just a
of course.
Image.
No. But so they basically like, he's like, ooh, this isn't, I guess like Bud Cort's like, ooh, this is interesting. Let me just like make money on this person who is not well, publishes the book, but then pops on Topsy Secrets. But then he gets obsessed about the number 23 in the publishing or reading of it.
The book.
So like, the book is like a virus.
But this is what I don't understand.
But then Agatha read it. She didn't go insane.
Seems fine.
Robin is reading it. He doesn't go insane.
But when did Agatha read it? Because she keeps on going, oh no, you're being crazy. First of all, the family's so okay with him writing on the walls. They're way relaxed with him going crazy. But like, when did she read it? Like, and because it seems like she's holding the book to set him up to open it. But
it did seem that way.
But then she's like,
I will say this for a slim, it's a novella. Let's be clear.
Yes.
It's 22 chapters. It's a shorty.
I mean, by the way, it's a graphic novel at points, and there's pictures in there. There's writing.
There's collage. it's a mixed media piece. But he really, there inexplicably, for reasons I'll never understand, the movie continuously gives us the dates.
Yes.
Like it'll be like February 5th. And I don't know why. The time, there is no ticking clock, there is no timeline, there is no reason to be jumping back and forth in time and trying to help us by understanding what day it is. But what it does let us know is it's taking Jim Carrey weeks to read a very small book. So my assumption is his wife read it just in an appropriate amount of time, which is, for a book that size, probably 3 hours.
Yeah. Well,
I think that's a good point. I thought for sure we were going to land, everything was going to culminate to a date that added up to 23.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Okay, well,
right. His birthday's on February 3rd. We know that.
Now, let me also just say
but
this.
But it didn't.
No.
I mean, this movie also feels like, while it's really leaning into all this conspiracy, it also feels like, is it a parody of it? Because
I thought that too at points.
When he starts reading this book, it's as if Jim Carrey is reading it like this, like he's doing a bit. Like, listen to Jim Carrey's voiceover of him reading the book.
Chapter 1. You can call me Fingerling. It's not my real name. It came from a book I read as a child. Fingerling at the Zoo. Paper flap long gone. It had a green hardback cover and mottled texture. It was possibly my very first book. Funny. I can't recall what it was about. The only thing I remember is the name. Fingerling.
It was so weird. Like, when he says, call me Fingerling, I'm like,
It's a bad book. It's also bad.
Yes. Like, this is not a book. This book is also like, I'm like, this is not compelling. I'm not sitting up.
When you realize it was written in a post-murder frenzy,
yes.
You're like, okay.
But that's my question about Agatha, because I believe that Agatha had Agatha's clearly already been seduced by the devil. That's why she wants to paint those walls red.
Okay. So she's already been turned.
Yes. So I think she had probably either already read the book before she saw it in the gift shop.
Oh, so maybe is Danny Houston the devil? That other doctor?
Maybe.
I would believe that only because Danny Houston is always the bad guy.
Yeah.
So when Danny Houston was even in the when I saw Danny Houston's name in the credits, yeah. I was like, well, that's who did it. And then he turns out to be seemingly benevolent. He seems to be an ally to Agatha and Robin in trying to help corral the more and more erratic Jim Carrey, correct or no?
Or is he just trying to manipulate him?
I don't know.
To what
know.
End? I thought it was going to be revealed at the end that Danny Houston had done the crimes, but was making Jim Carrey crazy to the point that Jim Carrey was going to be convicted of the murder. That it would seem as though Jim Carrey would incriminate like when Jim Carrey dug up the body, I thought, oh, this is it. They're going to make it so that he gets arrested for this, only to find out he did in fact do it, you know?
Interesting. I don't know.
Because at the end of the day, Danny Houston, not a bad guy.
Not a bad guy. And I will say the bad guy is Jim Carrey. And what I didn't understand is at the very end, and I'm jumping ahead, listeners, but at the very end, Jim Carrey says that because he's turned himself in, obviously the guy who was framed for the murder of Laura, which we haven't even got into the original murder, but whoever that college girlfriend of his was that he murdered.
Because she touched Danny Houston's, or no, she touched that other guy's finger.
Well, no, she did have sex with him in the woods.
Oh, yeah, that looks so uncomfortable.
But she was
very uncomfortable.
She was touching his fingerlings in the classroom.
That's why they call him Detector Fingerlings. He's always looking now for fingers touching other fingers.
I cannot get over the fact that he named the character Detective Fingerling in his hard-boiled, you know, Philip Marlowe-esque character is Detective Fingerling.
But here's my question. At the very end, he says, when he's talking to his son, Robin, that he's going to be in jail for a while. Justice has been served. And, you know, he's going to be serving his time until he gets parole. Why would this man ever get paroled?
Yeah. Oh, because it feel like it was like, he said the judge took kindness on him because he came for.
Why?
Basically, the judge was like, you didn't have to do this, so I'll go easy on you.
Oh.
Like, hey, you know
you
what?
You did me one, I'll do you one. Like,
yeah.
No,
yeah.
You killed someone.
Yeah.
And not only that, but another man sat in jail for 23 years. Right?
Oh, 23?
I don't know.
I don't know.
I know 15 plus 15 is 30. And then if you take 30 and you
minus seven,
you're going to get to 23. So
yes,
I do think, though, it's like, it's so weird because even in that final moment when they're at the gravesite, the devil man and dog are close, but everyone's always spying on people in very close proximity. Like when Jim Carrey is watching his wife and Danny Houston in that restaurant, he's so literally standing in the middle of an empty street staring into a big bay window. It's like, if any, like you would catch it in the corner of your eye. Like it's not, he's not even trying. Like everyone is just there. Like the other person standing at the cemetery, like, I'm 2 feet away.
It felt like, it felt like there was, it's so unsatisfying. Mm. This is a murder, thriller, mystery, whodunit.
I love these types of movies too.
It wants to be an erotic thriller because there's all these kind of like transgressive sexual things that are happening in the flashback, especially.
Fabrizia.
Oh, yes, with Fabrizia. And then there's also like an element where I felt like Jim Carrey was like, I want to make Seven.
Yes.
I want to make my Seven, my gritty, stylized crime thriller, blah, blah, blah. Except that at the end, the ending is so unsatisfying. It's that he's been the killer the whole time and that he just didn't know it. There's no outing of the bad guy. There's no satisfying unraveling of the mystery and the revelation of the real murderer, blah, blah, blah.
What it feels like to me is, when you've been in a writer's room or you're trying to come up with a solution for something and it's like late, it's like 11 o'clock at night, and it's like, all right, here's the deal. You know what it is? He wrote the book. She knew about the book, but she's also by the devil. And he, so he hid the body. It sounds good, fastly pitched, right? And then everyone's like, oh yeah, that is good. And then you go home, and then the next morning you come back and you're like, oh, what did we come up with? Oh, that doesn't make any sense.
But then they're like, wait a minute, fuck, we already cast Danny Houston, so he's gotta be the murderer. Right, he's Danny Houston.
When you look at my notes in a one section, these are the notes right after each other. Who is this? She wrote the book? He wrote the book? He was the detective? Wait,
and
it wasn't
so crazy
her?
Like that. Danny Houston, my notes are so similar. They're just almost, there's a huge chunk of my notes that all just, is this a homemade book? Movie we're in is in the book? Like all these, everything equals 23, but not really. It's all just questions.
All of mine are, why is he speaking to dogs like this? How dare he hate dogs? Why must he hate dogs?
I'm going to tell you this. I know that we talked a lot about the number 23. I thought this movie was off the rails when the son gave him his birthday gift and it looked like a 5-year-old made a mug for
him.
That
was
the son
crazy.
The son seems like a straight up heist. Like the son is
totally
making out with
normal.
His girlfriend.
Yes.
On the couch. He's like, here,
the
Dad.
The son is like a 16-year-old. They all have a lovely relationship and dynamic to each other. And the son looks like he made him something in like one of those pottery places that you go to
but
for
like, what
a 7-year-old birthday party.
What a child.
What a small child would make.
It's so off. It's not pretty in any way. It's like world's best dad. It's like, all right, this 18-year-old made this.
Do you find yourself searching for true crime podcasts that are different from what you're always recommended? Do you want to make a real difference in the cases that you're following? Well, you're a crime junkie. And I'm Ashley Flowers, the creator and host of the number one true crime podcast, Crime Junkie. There are hundreds of episodes already available, and each Monday we dive into the details of cases spanning from some of the most infamous to those that you have never heard covered before. Listen to Crime Junkie podcast now, wherever you're listening.
I just want to go back to Jim Carrey's weirdness. I'm watching the movie for clues. I'm like, what's going on here? Did you see that weird moment where like Jim Carrey's like trying on his vest for before he goes to the birthday party? He's like, I look like a rock star.
What the fuck are you talking?
And what?
I'm sorry, but Paul, I want to be clear. He says, I look like a rock star to his son or to Virginia.
Like he's trying to get fucked, and then you reveal that he's got a wife.
Yes.
Like you don't know.
It doesn't matter. By the way, it doesn't matter because he goes to that party and they do want to fuck him anyway. That woman, the supervisor, that's where the scene happens where she says, wag your tail at me. So he's in his movie being like, I need to be an object of sexual desire, but also a family man, also...
I have to say this. I have a theory. I don't know if I've talked about this theory here, but I'm going to talk about it now, which is... I believe that in every movie, Jim Carrey must show himself fucking because it's like, I am still a wanted man. Like in Ace Ventura, arguably one of the goofiest fucking movies, he fucks and it's like, and he's good at it. Like, it's not like it's a funny scene, but like the scene isn't funny like that about him fucking. It's like, oh no, no, he's really good at fucking. All the animals are watching him fuck. And it's like, and it's a weird choice. Like, I feel like Jim Carrey's like, I just need to let you everybody know, like, I may be weird or whatever,
I'm goofy, but I do funny voices. Yeah,
but I still fuck.
But yeah, I get it done. Good. Yeah.
Just because I'm wearing the mask. Don't worry, I fuck.
There is something, and I have to do a deeper research on this. But every time I see him in a movie, I'm like, it comes out of nowhere that people are like, I want to fuck you, and that's never like. And we've been watching a lot of Adam Sandler movies because our kids have been really enjoying them. And it's been great to watch. Like, Sandler doesn't carry himself like that. Bill Murray doesn't carry himself like that. Like, Steve Martin doesn't. It's like he's
You're
like,
right.
I fuck.
You're right. Yeah. And it's such a it's hard in a way because with Ace Ventura, it's such a funny movie and our kids love it. But we do have to constantly.
Oh yeah, that movie is the down
like
age
run in and fast forward Jim Carrey fucking.
I mean, there's a lot of things in there around sex that is a little messy.
I mean, it's all new meaning for take you to the pound.
By the way, the opening scene of fucking Ace Ventura, he has this like, he steals a dog, right? The reward for stealing a dog is a blowjob. Yeah. Like, the woman's like, I got to blow you.
Yes.
That's like the opening. That's okay. Like the cold
I'm gonna
open.
I'm going to be honest. I'll be honest. I don't think I've watched Ace Ventura for.
It's quite funny. You know, he's
very good
in it.
Yeah.
Probably 20 years.
I'll tell you this much. The rumor I heard about Ace Ventura was that Jim Carrey couldn't get a movie, you know, was trying to get a movie together, couldn't get one, and gets Ace Ventura and is like, this script is terrible, but I'm going to make sure it's going to be great. And every day would stay up until like 2 or 3 in the morning writing the pages for the next day to make sure it was great and really imbue this character and make it awesome. And I feel like he needs a little bit more of this energy in movie 23 to make it make sense. I feel like no one was looking at the next day's pages, or they were and they weren't looking at what they already shot. I don't know. Jim Carrey did fire his agent at the test screening of this movie, at the screening.
Whoa.
Which is also like, fuck you, because you clearly wanted to do this. You can't fire any, like, it's not like, all right, paint my house, I'll come home and see what it is. Like, you're an accomplice. Like, you were on set. Yeah. You saw what was, you got that bad back tattoo. You picked up the saxophone. You knew what you were doing.
I mean, now that I understand he was obsessed with the number 23 and all this, this has got to be a passion project. This is his toy.
It's his friend, yes. His friend, Fernley Phillips, who is the writer of this, his friend.
Okay.
Yes,
did anyone else notice that when he wrote a note to Agatha, when he was leaving to go dig out the skeleton at the park, which also had a name that, you know, rhymed together. Did anyone else notice that the note he left for Agatha that he put on the refrigerator and put a magnet on it for her to see, his handwriting was so flowery and flourished. I don't know if we have a screen grab of it, but it was the most kind of feminine. Swirly.
Don't you? I always assume that is a props department person.
1,000%. Yeah, it was hilarious.
It's hilariously not him.
Yes.
Because it should look like the chaotic scrawls
that are on his arms.
That he's been doing on his arms, on the walls, on the paint, on everything.
This was cursive, like pure cursive. Yeah.
I will say the interesting thing about Fernley Phillips, the writer of this, is he's only credited with the number 23.
It's like, gotta be a pseudonym. That's gotta be a pseudonym.
That
Jim Carrey wrote
pictures
this, right?
Of him, but like he never wrote any. Like, it's not even like, oh, like I've never seen an IMDb page. It's one credit.
I think there's something
going on. I would argue that Jim Carrey wrote this movie.
That's what I just said. Yeah, I feel like Jim Carrey wrote this and under a pseudonym, and Fernley Phillips is like his Tony Clifton.
Yeah,
Fernley Phillips, IMDb.
What are we doing? We can't be going down the rabbit hole. We're doing it. We're doing the number 23. We're stuck in a conspiracy.
That's what I'm saying. Like, they did this to us. The number 23 is out for us. I'm dead serious, guys. Fernley. Fernley
you
Phillips
guys are both
is
clickety clackety.
Yeah, I am
going through like a conspiracy theory.
Okay, all right, so I just found. Okay, I just found the New York Times. Molly and I are finding it at the same time. Okay, so okay, in February two, this is their wedding announcement. In February 2002, Fernley Phillips was an undiscovered Hollywood screenwriter with a month to go before his money would run out and he'd have to go home to England. He was so low on cash that he would wait until McDonald's offered hamburgers for 29 cents and buy five to save money for the coming week. Alyssa Ferguson was an associate producer working for Bo Flynn, reading 30 to 50 scripts a week. When Phillips' screenplay, The Number 23, landed on her desk, it was love at first sight. I thought this was probably the best script I'd seen in my entire life. And that's how they met. She read this script. And wow. And that's how they, like, this movie united them over the movie 23.
Wow.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean,
and it looks like he's written other things too.
Okay,
it does look like he's written other things.
I don't know, Jason. No, Jason, I don't see where you're seeing that.
Sorry. I mean, I'm saying he is credited as having written features for Paramount, okay. Warner Brothers, Universal,
okay.
Fox.
And okay,
now,
so maybe
these
never
may not have been produced.
Got it. Okay.
But there are plenty of people who have successful careers in which they get paid to a lot of money to write scripts that then eventually do not get made.
I love that he found the love of his life from writing the movie The Number 23. Like, this is
incredible.
Like, it would be a very different story. And he teaches a screenwriting class. We're going deep. He teaches a screenwriting class. So he's a real person.
We apologize for suggesting that this was that he was a pseudonym.
Yes, but by the way, and now we're going to sign up for his class.
It's very interesting to see all of the other celebrities that were at the premiere of The Number 23.
Oh, whoa! Should this be a segment?
This is a segment
we've never done.
Well, I have a question.
I'll tell you who is there. Stacey Keibler.
Oh, hey.
Rosario Dawson.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Came out to support, which is always nice to see.
I want to ask this question. Can I quickly say?
Yeah, go ahead.
What is your take on this? Do either of you show up to a movie that you have no involvement in? And let's bar a very close friend's something. But like, this is like, oh, hey, you know, this is a movie premiere, and take away COVID and everything like that. Like, do you show up if you're not involved in it at all?
Now, just to clarify, you mean like walk the carpet and be photographed?
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Okay. You're not saying, do you go to the movie?
Oh,
you're
no,
saying,
no, no, yeah.
Do you go to the premiere and do you get photographed for a movie you were not in?
Because there are certain friends
in.
I know that like will say, oh, I'm going to go to this premiere tonight. Oh, did you have anything to do with it? No. I'm just going to go walk the carpet. Yeah,
I don't.
Okay.
I don't. I mean, like you said, though, unless I'm supporting a friend.
Right.
Like if you had a movie that was going and you invited me to come.
Yeah.
Even if I wasn't in it, I certainly would come and support, you know, your film or whatever. But no, I wouldn't go to. Now, let me be clear. If they said come to the premiere of Fast 10.
Oh.
Fast and Furious 10.
I'm in.
I would go and. And if they said, do you want to walk the red carpet? I would be like, absolutely,
I'm 100%.
Yes.
I mean, that's different because we are involved in that one.
That's what
We've
I think,
done
too.
It.
But no, I wouldn't randomly go to some random premiere. Rather,
yeah, I would definitely go for a friend, obviously. But I wouldn't go either unless it was a fast movie or it was a movie that I felt like super attached to.
Right. So this, I'm just saying, so these people who are showing up, they're coming because either they're part of, maybe they're part of this. Maybe they're 23 conspiracy theorists. Maybe, I don't know. I don't want to lie.
They're 23 and me.
A part of me wonders, though, if some of these actresses might have been in a cut of the movie. And because I know I have a number of friends who did not find out they were cut out of the movie until the premiere.
Whoa.
Oh, yeah.
So it's also possible they thought they were
movies,
in it.
My favorite
thing was Christina Applegate was there, too.
I showed up. I was in that Larry David movie, Clear History. And I went. I was excited. I knew I was in it. I shot with Larry for like a day.
I went with you. I'll never forget. He was pretty much the first person to arrive.
He was the first
the
person to arrive
for his own movie.
And then they displayed the red carpet on the screen. So like as you were sitting in your seat, you could see people walking around. You couldn't hear it, but you could see it. And Larry got up to take people off the red carpet so the movie would start on time, which was one of the best moves I've ever seen for the lead.
Amazing.
He was already, but when I walked into that movie, I bumped into him in the lobby. He was like, oh no, oh no. We cut that scene. We cut it way down. Oh no. It was such a funny moment of him realizing it. And then it does sting a little bit when but it was nice that it acknowledged.
I would think especially to find out at the premiere.
Yes, yeah. You've gotten dressed up. It's horrible.
All right. So anyway, down that rabbit hole, I will say this. What is Jim Carrey as a private investigator if he's meeting with suicidal people? Because he's not a cop. He's a PI. Right.
Did he start as a cop and get disgraced? Wasn't there a thing where they were like, you're not a detective anymore? Or something like that.
Well, that was that moment where he goes, did they take away your gun? And he's like, yeah, but hold on. Yeah. But when he first meets with that woman, she's kind of hanging, like she hung herself.
This movie's a representation of suicide and mental illness, frankly, is deeply troubling and problematic.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
Across the board, everything from the hospital to the whatever is going on with him, with everybody. Everybody, the treatment of mental illness in this movie is absolute, you know, just frankly nuts.
Well, maybe because they're all. You know, they're all obsessed with the number 23. So they're not, you know, they can't be doing their job. But that idea that he's like meeting with her, like he's meeting with a woman before she commits suicide to talk to her about why she. I mean, this is where the movie really like, I don't understand what the fuck is going on.
I couldn't follow that.
And I guess it makes sense that it's written by somebody who is having a mental breakdown as well, because it is confusing. I mean, it's confusing. It's confusing.
Oh, yeah. No, that's the thing is none of the, because we spend so much time inside the story, inside the book.
Yes.
Where Jim Carrey is portraying Detective Fingerling. Again, I can't state it enough. His name is Fingerling. And we spend so much time in that story that it features Jim Carrey narrating, voiceover for the movie, hard-boiled kind of, again, like Raymond Chandler-style noir, hard-boiled detective stuff. And it's nonsense. The story of the book, the Detective Fingerling story, doesn't make any sense.
No.
He's not on the case. He's just jumping around fucking people, holding his sax. This is Chekhov's sax. He's holding it, but he never plays it.
By the way, I will say this. I wrote it. I jumped up in the middle of watching this movie last night. Like I had figured it out. Every now and then there'll be a moment. Like I figured out the Sixth Sense before the reveal. And I was like, so proud. Like, I was like, I did it. I saw that. And I was able to enjoy the movie for the next 10 minutes, like seeing what I knew. I jumped up the same way last night. And I was like, he's got rabies. That's what I thought the entire movie was.
Oh,
like,
wow.
He's gone crazy. I love that as from the initial dog bite.
Yes. It's like he got rabies. And he's gone crazy. He didn't treat it.
Wow.
He didn't take it seriously. And then they never even discussed that. That was But I really was
that
like,
that would have been incredible because, you know, rabies, once it takes over, it will, you're done. It's over.
And that's what I thought would have been interesting. I was like, oh, this is like, but this whole idea of this larger murder plot. And then it's also like, you're doing something really weird, which is like, you're telling three stories. You're telling the story of the dog catcher who has amnesia, who killed this girl that he loved. But then that's also being personified in another book because he's also the suicide blonde. She jumps out the window, but he actually jumped out the window because he was feeling that. So like the movie opens with the end. It's very like, and then when you try to connect the pieces, it doesn't make sense. Nor do they even do like that Fight Club thing of like, oh, you see
what you were missing.
Nope. Right.
Yeah. That's what they never filled in the blanks for you. They just, you know, they just give you a couple of reveals that are just not satisfying. You know, like the other thing that's really unsatisfying is just the end. The end of the movie, like when he, it should feel incredible when he gets to that room and is ripping the wallpaper off to discover that chapter 23 of the book is on the walls of the hotel. That should be a fucking awesome reveal where you're like, whoa, the missing chapter. And you're like, wait, what? What is going, what is this? Also, there's so little, the movie is full of truly insane moments that get no reaction from people. When Bud Cort slices his own neck open with a box cutter in the mailbox store, nobody yells, nobody screams.
Do you mean the mailbox facility, as Virginia Madsen refers to it?
I'm sorry, the MF, the mailbox.
I love Virginia Madsen. By the way, I also like love Virginia Madsen.
I love her too. It made me think of like, where is she and why don't I see more of her?
Like
she was terrific in this.
Virginia Madsen always. And Logan Lerman, both great actors. And I will say even Jim Carrey in this, all like selling it. Like, except for Jim Carrey's voiceover. But Virginia Madsen, like, I'm like, oh, you're
great.
You have to do the hardest thing, which is like you come home, your husband's written all over the walls, and you're like, hey, all right, what's on your mind, honey? Like, well,
I agree. I feel like Virginia Madsen and Logan Lerman, and to a lesser degree, Danny Houston, but really, Virginia Madsen and Logan Lerman are doing doing yeoman's work. Whoa. Trying to ground this movie into like reality.
Did you know
by being like, okay,
Virginia Madsen
ahead.
Was married to Danny Houston.
What?
Oh, I didn't know that.
From 1989 to 1992.
I like that you almost just said that she was married to Logan Lerman.
Wow. So they were.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay.
Not
cool.
Married
wait.
When they were in this movie.
No.
Together.
But
wow.
I just. Yeah.
Wait,
when were they married?
From 1989 to 1992, a short lived one.
Oh, interesting. So this was a reunion of
yeah.
sorts.
I don't think I knew she was married to Antonio Sabato Jr.
Oh. Wow.
Oh, I didn't
or
know
had
that
a child
either.
With him. Wow.
Wow. We're getting into it, guys.
We're deep in Madsen. She was great. She was great in this. And
oh,
and because there was also a period where, and I don't know what you guys felt like, there was also a period where I was like, oh, she did.
Yes.
Absolutely.
And I was like, okay, I'm on board for that version of it where she is. Her past is coming back to and because of this book, or someone is taunting her because she is the first person who finds the book, you know. So I was like, oh, is this somehow her perpetuating or putting this thing in motion?
Can I just,
you know?
Can I just quickly pitch out what I think this story is and tell me if I'm right or wrong? Jim Carrey's dad has been haunted by the number 23. Jim Carrey, his father kills himself. Jim Carrey then, you know, feels like, oh my gosh, my dad had this little curse, but I'm doing okay. I'm in love with a girl. Everything's going great. Catches his girlfriend cheating on him. And then the number 20, that's the number 23 is kind of infecting him at that point. He kills his girlfriend, blames it on someone else, but that forces him to go crazy. He tries to commit suicide, gets amnesia, goes to this hospital, gets better. The number 23 is gone, immediately meets Virginia Madsen. They get married. They have a very happy life, besides the fact that he hates dogs and he's slightly racist. And everything is okay until he finds this book. But we don't know anything. And then we know what happens there. But we don't know anything about how Virginia Madsen gets corrupted or why she is the way she is. Why she wants the
what
walls?
Do you mean?
Why she wants the walls blood red? Is she working for the devil?
Oh. No,
when
idea.
She read the book, like we don't know anything about this character.
I don't know. Juna, I'd like to hear what you think, but I don't think the movie thinks Virginia Madsen has been corrupted or
okay.
is any sort of. I think Virginia Madsen, Danny Houston, Robin the son. I think they all exist they are benign. I don't think any of them have malice or malicious intent. And maybe that's why they cast Danny Houston, was to throw you off the scent and
yeah.
be like, you think he's going to be the bad guy, but he's actually helping, you know?
Yeah, I genuinely don't know, because I did find it suspect that she was painting the walls red. I mean, what a color,
yeah.
you know? And
but also blue. One of the other rooms, she was painting blue during the movie.
Okay. But she also found the book.
Well,
yes.
that her finding the book and then her trying to throw him off the scent. I don't know. There's something there. Like, but you said that she also. So who hid the body? She hid the body.
She did.
She hid the skeleton. Once Bud Cort slices his neck open in the mailbox facility, and he says to her, go to the Institute. You know, it's you'll find it. Go find it. Go to the Institute. So, and she pulls out of his pocket his ID card for the Nathaniel Institute. Is that right?
That's correct.
And his name is Sirius Leary. His name, right. Is Dr. Seriously.
Yes.
I think his name is basically Dr. Seriously.
Oh my God.
Oh my God.
But he has in his pocket his hospital ID for when, so, and she takes it and she goes to the Nathaniel Institute, which is covered in like razor wire and has clearly been shuttered for a decade at least, right?
Yes, at least.
Why is he still carrying his ID in his pocket? She walks right in. The light bulb is red. There are lit candles in this abandoned facility. I couldn't make heads or tails out of any of this. Why are there so many candles around that are lit? I'm assuming she lit them. Why is there a red light bulb? It's fucking crazy. But anyway, she goes, she finds the locker, the foot locker that has all of her husband's stuff. She finds the manuscript. She rips the paper off of it, the top secret, and finds his name underneath, right?
Right.
So this is where she learns everything. Then she goes and she realizes he killed whoever, and she goes and takes the skeleton because she doesn't want him to be caught. Is that what's happening?
I do not know, because I'm not sure why she's protecting him. Like, I don't think he called the cops.
I don't know either.
So protecting him from what exactly?
From the cops.
Okay, so at that point she knows, but at that point does she know he killed Laura?
Someone, yes. She realizes he wrote
this
story.
Wow, what a wife then, honestly.
Yeah, yes. Yes.
You know?
Relationship goals?
Truly, like, I much respect.
I'm reading through some interviews with the cast, and I want to read you this. I feel like they all drank the Kool-Aid pretty early on, because this is kind of interesting. It's like Virginia Madsen's like, I love this. The number 23, you know, there's so many things in case you're a doubter. And then Carrie's like, yeah, there was a phenomenon on set. You know, if you know that my name and Schumacher's name, you put them together, that's 23 letters. And then Virginia Madsen goes, yeah, well, Danny Houston and I were married 23 years ago. And, you know, and so like they're all like up. I think that they've lost the plot on set a little bit too. It's like, and I think what they're all saying.
Well, yeah, because that makes no sense. Because you, what they can't do is be like, well, yeah, because Virginia Madsen and Logan Lerman's names together. Oh, wait, no, those aren't. Well, okay, no, so not those ones. Okay, so how about, you know?
This is what Joel Schumacher says. He's like, you know, he's like, this is my 20th movie. I wish it was 23.
I couldn't. And then they do this thing where they say that he sees the dog again. The dog takes him to the cemetery again. And then the priest comes out and says that the dog is the guardian of the dead.
Well, that's the devil dog.
Or is it an angel dog? Is the dog helping solve and bring closure to this?
All I know.
That's a good question.
Soul?
Because why would this dog be a devil dog? Why would Laura be in hell? She didn't do anything wrong.
Yeah, Laura needs to be put to rest. And is the dog trying to bring closure to her restless soul?
Well, First of all, all dogs are angel dogs.
All dogs go to heaven.
Okay. Yes.
All dogs go to heaven. Must love
so
dogs.
So let's be clear about that.
Well, can we just say that I will talk about this, and this is a very serious thing, actually. The dog did not show up to the premiere. I think that they did have a falling out. The dog is not like the way he was edited.
Snub.
Yeah. Wow.
And that is, of course, and we're talking about Ned, who played Butch. And this was Butch's acting debut. You know, he was very comfortable with the cast. And even when he was being chased by Jim Carrey, you know, that, like, so Ned is great little work there by Ned.
I don't know, you guys. This doesn't, you know, it just doesn't, no pun intended, add up.
Oh, yeah. Remember so when true. He tried to hit the dog, too?
Yes. I was so upset. He literally, and what was that about exactly? What was that moment about? Why was he trying to kill the dog?
Because I think the dog represents his, if he didn't get bit by the dog, he would have been on time to his birthday dinner. And if he was on time to his birthday dinner, he would never have looked at the book and his life would have been
great.
All
these things might be true, but like now we have to go kill that dog.
And not only that, but why do we have to bring the family along for it? Like, he brings his family along for killing dogs, digging up bodies.
Getting into the mailbox facility to watch a man slit his throat.
It feels like they're all with the same level of intent as, like, let's go play Pokemon Go together.
Yeah, let's do some geocaching or whatever.
Yes, some geocaching by digging up the bones of a woman that I killed 20 years ago. Like, what is this?
Yeah, like, it's a team building.
He's a bad dad.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Well, obviously, we have opinions about this movie. And I want to bring you into the world of the people who love this movie. Because now it is time for second opinions.
The movie was a piece of shit. Yet this person recommends it. Tell me, what is the message? I need a second opinion.
All right, these are 5-star reviews culled from Amazon. I might even start taking them from Letterboxd as well because these are pretty great. This one just starts out. Title is Solid Movie. Jim Carrey made a good movie, but there is one flaw only. No reference to Michael Jordan. Who was number 23. So there you go. But 5 stars nonetheless.
You know what 5 stars is. 2 stars and 3 stars put together.
Oh, you're right. Oh. Wow, look at that.
Holy shit.
Jingle customer writes, I know for me the movie seemed to drag a little, but when things, a.k.a. the truth, starts to unfold, then it starts to make sense. And you will come to realize you may not have been paying attention. This is a movie you're going to want to watch again because you need to watch it like The Sixth Sense. I first saw this movie when it came out, and this was only the second time I watched it, and I couldn't remember how it ended, but I'm the type of person who likes knowing what's going on. So, like, I like spoilers, and it helps me enjoy movies because, you know, if something doesn't make sense right away, I'll get bored, but that's just me. This is a good movie, and if you're like me, I would say be patient and watch, and it will all make sense. 5 stars. Suspense. ... Pay attention.
Guys, I just realized something that's really fucking me up. I watched this movie on Amazon Prime.
Okay.
And 23 is a prime number.
Oh!
It's fucking real! Here we go.
All right, I have 2 quick ones here. This is from Dominic Calandra. My name is Dominic Joseph Calandra. If you count the spaces as characters, there are 23 characters in my name. I was born on 12-17-93. It adds up to 23. Or if you prefer, 12 plus 17 plus minus 9 plus 3 is equal to 23. I checked the time right after the character turns to look at the clock. His said 11-12. Mine said 9-23. Checked again later in the movie at a random time. What time was it? 9:59. Added up. I had a friend who was born on March 23rd. We have 23 mutual Facebook friends. She said she couldn't remember a large amount of her childhood. I never found out why exactly coincidences, but Jesus, that's weird. Stay safe. 5 stars. Am I top secrets?
Stay safe. Am I top secrets? Top secrets.
I'll never forget.
And Sirius Leary. Dr. Sirius Leary and Top Secrets. This is some next level nonsense.
Detective Fingerling. This is absurd.
I feel like this movie is a prank.
That's what I'm saying. It plays at parts like it is a prank.
I feel utterly ill.
Oh my God.
I really don't feel well. I mean, don't. Top Secrets.
Top Secrets.
is some next level stuff.
Like, because you also feel like they, like, but this is also, we have to just briefly just mention, like, Joel Schumacher, I feel like he's like, yeah, top secrets. I like it. Like I feel like it's like,
oh, yeah.
Like, you know,
it's,
he's
just
like,
so crazy because it's like, that's not a name. Topsy is not.
Topsy, like
Topsy Kretz. What are you talking
about?
By the
way, just have it. Like, just have
it. Of course, it is. It's Topsy Kretz. You know my very serious girlfriend, Topsy Kretz, right?
Written by anonymous. Oh my gosh. The tagline for this movie: "The truth will find you." First, it takes hold of your mind. Another one: first, it takes hold of your mind, then it takes hold of your life. Or finally, the other tagline: a number is just a number, or is it?
What's amazing is that Bud Cort, Dr. Sirius Leary, also still crazy, he, having the manuscript that says by Jim Carrey's character name, I can't remember what it is, he puts Topsy Kretz over it. So he invents the name Topsy Kretz. That's, so he must, I mean, like, he's like, well, the name should be Top Secret, but I can't just say Top Secret. Topsy Kretz?
Oh,
yes, okay. That, I want to know what that journey is.
I mean, it feels like a dumb person trying to be clever. And I say that in the nicest way. It's like, top secret. Because it's also like, it's not a top secret that he's, like, Topsy Kretz is not that, it should be like an anagram.
Did any of us think of it? We saw the name and heard the name over and over again, and it wasn't until that prison scene where the guy goes, yeah, the author, top secret, that I was like, oh, no.
I know. I mean, because my thought would be the better take on it would be that it's his name, right? Like Walter Sparrow, and you anagram that, or like, you know, or Sparrow's Nest, right, or Sparrow's Brain, you know, some version of his name. Like, I am Walter Sparrow, you know, but it's like, I don't even know how you would be, but it's like, it's not top secret. It's not top secret.
Anyway, no, it's ridiculous.
Folks, this is a fun one. I mean, wow. And it represents to me.
Yeah. Because it's unfinished. Cause you didn't get closure.
No.
God. All right. Well, at that point,
thanks a lot, Paul.
Sorry, guys. Thank you, April. Anyone want to plug anything that they got?
I will plug, and this is not a plug, but it is just a full-throated, full-hearted recommendation. The movie of the year, Paul, you told me about it. I've watched it. It's called Plane, and
it is incredible. June and I saw that in the theater. It was so fun.
Incredible
There's
stuff.
Part of me that's like, should we do that on this show? Only because I would love to just talk about it, and maybe we should.
Let's revel in it.
It's back. It's on VOD, and oh my gosh. And again, it's just a giant shout out to Gerard Butler for giving us that amazing geostorm. You can see it on all of our socials. I love that he did that during the Plane premiere. But yeah, if you are interested in Plane, let us know on the Discord or on social, and maybe we should just tackle it. I know that
it's fantastic.
I loved it.
I was having a blast. It was
so
great.
Fun. It's like a solid movie.
Yeah. Oh, it's terrific. I loved every goddamn minute of it. Please put me in Plane 2.
We just want to be in planes. Well, by the way, I want to go this way. Well, we can get into it bigger, but I think there needs to be a prequel or sequel with Skarsgård. I want to see Mike Coulter do his
incredible.
Like, another movie.
His Foreign Legion service, or I would be into what happens next for him as well.
That's what
whatever
I think.
Wherever he goes next.
Amen. Yeah,
got it.
Man.
I thought he was fantastic as well. Absolutely.
What else are you up to, Jason?
I want to plug, I did two recent appearances on, some other terrific podcasts that I want to get out there. I was a guest on, the fantastic Earwolf podcast, TV, I say, with Ashley Ray, which is a fantastic show. I did a great year. If you like the recommendation episodes that Paul and I do on The Last Looks, this was a year end, recommendation, list with, me and Ashley Ray. It's a fantastic show. And then I just did an episode of have our friend Kulap Vilaysack has a wonderful, and Suchin Pak have a wonderful podcast called Add to Cart. And I just did a whole episode that is, no joke, everybody, a secret pilot for Zook's Cubes.
By the way, I first of all, upset that you did Zook's Cubes off of the How Did This Get Made main feed.
I'm so sorry. I mean, let's be honest. It's not really Zook's Cubes. It's Add to Cart.
You gave me a cube for my birthday. I'm so excited about it, but it opened my mind to what a cube is. And maybe in Last Looks, we should talk about it a little bit because I need to understand.
Did you notice that it stands flat when
yes.
you open it?
And like, I'm like, this is not how I, because what my cubes have been are simply just, by the way, if you're not hearing June's voice, she's not just sitting here quietly. She had to go. But like, they're just like little formless bags. That's what the cubes I've been working.
Well, that what I gave you is more of something to carry, like, you know, it's got a little bit of padding.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
got a little bit of organization. So that is more for, like, I have one of those that I when I travel with, like, an Apple TV and some
yes.
cords and a camera. And it's like, because it has a little bit of padding,
yes.
I put, like, electronics in that cube.
There's a, like, I have a little electronic, we'll get into it. I'm going to listen into Add to Cart. Add to Cart is a great show. It's super fun.
Add to Cart is a blast. And I just, they ask people to bring products or
yeah.
things that they like or enjoy and want to talk about. And so I just took it the opportunity to talk about backpacks and packing cubes and my favorite card game, Monopoly Deal, which I also gave
which is
fantastic.
Which was amazing. And I got to play that with my kids. I will tell you that the thing that you've gotten our family hooked on is Flushing Frenzy, which is a which is basically a toilet roulette. You roll a dice, you crank a toilet, and then you plunge it, and then if you lose by when the poop shoots out, and then literally a poop with eyes. It's the best game of
it
all
is
time.
It is a game that the game item is a toilet that you plunge, and a poop shoots out the top, and whoever catches the poop gets the point.
Yeah.
Come on,
it's,
that's a fucking great
it's a
game.
Great game. Now I will also just talk about a podcast I was on, and I wanted to ask your question. I wanted to ask you a question about it. So I did Dax Shepard's podcast.
Sure, Armchair Expert.
They
yes.
love you.
Oh yeah, he and Monica.
Yes, they talk so highly of you. I've never been reached out to more in my life about being on a podcast than I was after
oh, yeah.
that show. Did you find that too?
Yes, absolutely. Like I, my cousins reached out to me. People who I don't think have ever listened to any other podcast listened to that podcast.
You know, I think that we do the show for such a long time that like no one tells us like, hey, I heard your show or whatever. So it's nice when you hear like feedback that it doesn't just go into the ether. All right, so that is it. Jason, I think I'm going to take your challenge and we're going to make a Bud Quartz Crazy Room. Or maybe should it be Dr. Sirius?
Dr. Sirius Leary?
Dr. Sirius Leary's Crazy Room. We should maybe like make it like a bar shirt. Like it's like a, like it almost looks like an advertisement for
oh,
a bar
like
or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. Like it's
yeah,
a logo.
Like
it's a logo. Yeah.
That maybe that's the way to go. So check out TeePublic there. And people, make sure you listen to Last Looks because we got some big surprises coming up. We always have good special guests. Jason and I are breaking down a lot of stuff. We're getting into cubes. We're going to get into podcasts, everything there. And a big thank you to our entire team. I'm talking about the amazing producerial work of Scott Sani, Molly Reynolds, and our movie-picking producer, Avril Halley, our engineer, Alex Gonzalez, and our publisher, July Diaz. People, they make the trains run, and we love them. So we will see you next week for Last Looks. And until then, bye for now.
Do you find yourself searching for true crime podcasts that are different from what you're always recommended? Do you want to make a real difference in the cases that you're following? Well, you're a crime junkie. And I'm Ashley Flowers, the creator and host of the number one true crime podcast, Crime Junkie. There are hundreds of episodes already available, and each Monday we dive into the details of cases spanning from some of the most infamous to those that you have never heard covered before. Listen to Crime Junkie Podcast now, wherever you're listening.
Hey, it's Jason Mantzoukas wishing Scott and everybody else of all stars and stripes a happy 15th anniversary, Comedy Bang Bang. You goddamn did it. Eat shit. Hang on, man.